When I first moved to Toronto, I made a list of things that I wanted to accomplish. And one of them was like build a robot, write a novel. And one of them was like make a wizard spell tome. So this, it doesn't have a cover or anything yet, but I'm like working on, it says Wizard's Rule.
Nice shirts. Yeah.
Howdy, hey, and welcome to Nice Shorts.
I'm Fu Yang.
And I'm Johnny Niddle.
And this is a show where we interview animators about shorts they make.
Today we have Terry Ibell.
Terry is a stop motion and 2D animator living in Toronto.
He is also the host of the
Animation Industry Podcast.
It's good. Go listen.
In part one of our interview, Terry walks us through his Let's Go Luna shorts.
He discusses creating evergreen content,
teaches us the origin story of the mouse,
and shares his lifelong hobby of creating an epic wizard tome.
And now on with the show.
Yeah.
Johnny, you know what?
What?
You know what? Today we have Terry.
I know, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And the first thing I'm going to challenge you is to pronounce his name, full name, correct.
Oh.
Please go ahead.
Am I guessing if it's Terrence or not? It's not.
What Terrence?
No. Is Terry? Terry is your full first name? Yeah. That's awesome. Terry Ibell.
Say it with more confidence.
Terry Ibell is our guest today.
Yeah, Terry Ibell.
Yay, you did it.
I forgot to add the after.
After.
Yeah, that's the official accent mark.
This is called the Terry Shelf, specifically.
The Terry Shelf.
Yes.
The stop motion thing. Like, I'm so tired for being a tall person working on these stages. I got to hold myself up.
Yeah. I don't know. I do this when somebody says something nice to me. I'm just like, oh, thanks.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it's like a manner thing. Like, so how tall you are, Terry?
I'm 6'4".
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Lations.
Yeah.
Okay, tiny thing. As a fan, since your height is 6'4", mm-hmm. So is there any problem when you work at home or, you know, you go to a stupid body working?
Yeah. I mean, the world is kind of made for people that are a little shorter than 6'4". Like, I remember last year, I actually hit my head on, you know, those handles on the subway that, like, come down and you can grab them? Bashed my forehead on one of them and I emailed them and I was like, hey, just so you know, like maybe next time you design your subway cars, you could consider people who are above 6 feet in your designs. So like, I don't know, buses and planes and like stuff like that is not really designed for tall people like me. And like even my desk and ergonomics is tough to come by. But when I was working at Stupid Buddy on Ultra City Smiths, it was actually okay because all of their sets were quite tall. And I think everybody else had a problem because when I would go into other people's sets, they'd be standing on boxes and I'd just be standing normally. So yeah, I don't know. It wasn't too much of a problem, but I have come into situations before where something is too low and I'm like breaking my back, bending over, animating or stuff like that. So I wish I was a little bit shorter, but I'm very easy to spot in a crowd, and I can also easily spot you in a crowd.
Oh, yeah, never and lose your friends. Air is always very fresh, I guess, when you take a... Yeah.
It's so funny when I do these podcasts, and then I end up meeting the person in person, and the first reaction is always like, oh my gosh, you're so much taller than I imagined.
You should put like a height thing behind you on the wall so they know. They're not surprised.
Yeah.
you could adjust it. It's your wall.
I'll just do my podcast standing against the wall so they know how tall I am.
Like a lineup. Like Fu's artwork behind her. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other a little thing that you have to do is like you have a lifelong hobby project. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I can actually let me show you some of it. So I started this.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. I think I started this in 2012. When I first moved to Toronto, I made a list of things that I wanted to accomplish. And one of them was like build a robot, write a novel. And one of them was like make a wizard spell tome. So this, it doesn't have a cover or anything yet, but I'm like working on, it says Wizard's Rule.
Isn't that on, a cover?
But like I have like leather and like all the stuff that I want to bind it in. So these are just the pages that I've like bound. And it's gonna be hard to open because there's like stuff in it, like dead moths and stuff in it. But like
what?
Holy
yeah. So I've been
working on this
for quite a while. And it's just silly spells that I make up and then I illustrate. Got some ink and I've learned how to calligraphy. And I made the colors you see, I made those. I like found recipes for ink. And it's like you take like kind of like really strong looking fruit, I guess, like blueberries or raspberries, and you add vinegar and salt. And you like mash it up. So I've been working on this spell tome, and it's basically my, I feel like I just showed it without describing it. I have been calligraphying silly spells into a tome so that by the time, and I've been working on this for like 10 years, and it's got so many blank pages still. But I figure by the time I'm like really old, like 85, I'll have just like it filled with spells, and then I will just be a wizard with a wizard tome. I'll be a really old bearded wizard with a wizard tome. So that's like a random hobby that I have.
I have so many questions. I'm just going to go with a couple of them. So using food to make the ink, is there any chance of it going bad? Because I've heard of like the yellow one using eggs.
Oh, I don't know about the yellow one. I mean, so like you can see how like this used to be like the blue, I actually bought blue ink, but all this other stuff used to be like vibrant red and yellow and stuff, but it's like faded over time, which I think looks really cool. But that's where you add the vinegar and salt to the ink and it... I guess it's been fine. So we'll find out. Maybe it'll start growing mold and that'll be part of the experience.
Like the road you did for
Aiken. Yeah, exactly.
So are you going to sell, like, are you going to make copies of this? Because that is so cool.
I don't know how I would make copies, but I kind of like it just being this one thing that exists. And like, I don't know, when I die one day, something will happen to it. It'll go in like a garage sale or an estate sale or end up in a used bookstore and then somebody will find it. And like, I think it'll just be this cool thing that exists. I'm hoping it doesn't start on fire or
don't jinx mold it.
No,
trashed somehow.
A backfire spell. Yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe like in 100 years, somebody just owns this random copy that's like deteriorating and full of like weird spells. And I also like made up a made up language as well for some of them so that you can't, like, they're legible, but my goodness, let me see if I can find one. They are not like, I just made up symbols that correspond to like the alphabet. So for instance, like this one is not, you can see it's not like written in like alpha numeric code, but it still like makes sense as a spell. Like I can read it, but like I made it up, but somebody else wouldn't be able to read it unless they spend some time deciphering.
Can you perform one right now?
Perform a spell?
Or just read one? Like, we'll add some
mystic. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, this one's called Animate Skelewizard.
Okay. Reanimation, I like it.
You need +5 necromancer points you get +5 necromancer points if you engage in it, do it. And the spell is Navigate the Labyrinth of the Wizard Mausoleum and unearth the bones of thine chosen deceased. Sorry, it's hard to read my own calligraphy writing.
Yeah, it's good.
Also because like I end up just spilling a lot of ink everywhere. oh my goodness. Bear them above ground and layest them out in the shadows of a rafting log. A rafting log? A rotting log.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Terry!
Place an emerald between its rotten teeth and backwards recite the incantation of deepest sleeps. Skelewizards are fearsome fiends. Ensure thine robes are gathered for quick escapes. That's it.
I think I wrote the exact same thing on a Valentine's once. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it's really similar. That's so cool, though. Like, you see, a book full of... That's awesome.
There's like 60-something pages in here. So I don't know. I filled up maybe like 15, 20 of them.
So you made this.
Your goal is to fill it, right? Fill it out all.
Yeah, and you then to like bind the leather cover, and like I bought on like Etsy, I found somebody who like blacksmiths like dragon emblems and stuff. So I bought some of those, and they'll be like decaled around it. So yeah.
That's awesome. So there's this. There's the book, the fantasy novel you have written.
Yeah.
And are you making like game mechanics for this? This reminds me of the old school books that you read through, like the fantasy, like the sword and dungeon, sword and sorcery books. And then they'd have like, here's an encounter you play in the middle of it.
Oh, there are no game mechanics in it. No. The fantasy novel you're asking about? It's just a novel. You can read it front to back. It exists.
Can I?
I'm part of a writing group. We've been meeting for quite a few years, and we're called Goat Club.
Goat Club.
Because all of our we all met at a fantasy novel writing course at University of Toronto. There's five of us. Mm. I think only four of us still meet. It's been since like 2015 or something. And all of us just randomly had goats in our novels, so we called each other a Goat Club. So we meet like once a month or so to like review a section of somebody's novel together. So we've kind of all gone through each other's novels, like a full go through, I guess. And now I'm working on the second edit, but that's taking quite some time because I have so many other commitments. So I haven't really worked on it in a couple of
years. Once a month for 7 years, and you do this still while working on other stuff?
Yeah.
And you still want to build a robot?
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
Does your calendar look different than a normal human calendar? Like, are there more days in it? How does it work?
I don't know. My Google Calendar is just like lots of blocks for things.
Just yelling at you.
I think I've just like, so I'm somebody who, if I have too much downtime, I start to feel anxious. Mm-hmm. Like I can't sit still. Like if I have a couple days in a row where I'm doing nothing, I don't feel good. So I'm constantly filling my time with stuff, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. but I'm trying to slow down and build like a healthier lifestyle. Cause you know, I'm working on a video game right now. I have the podcast. I have the pitches that are going through different processes, the novel, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm trying to like try to build more of a balance this year specifically, because like coming out of the pandemic where I spent a really like for the first year and a half, I was just working from like morning to night just constantly. And I was like, this is awesome. I don't have to travel anywhere. I can get so much done. And I had so much going on. And then last fall, I decided to take like a big break and do nothing. And then I like traveled to Spain, see some friends, and like just kind of enjoyed the outdoors a little bit. And now I'm like, okay. So I went through this really intense period where I was like working and going to school and doing all this stuff on the side and et cetera, et cetera. And then I went through like a super break. And now I'm like, let's build something more sustainable for myself going forward.
Oh, that's really a lot of stages you got. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to call him lazy. Huh?
I'm just very happily surprised to see that spell book, because what you have for your style is so different.
Yeah.
My imagination was like, with song, you're like, let's go Luna shorts or your other. Yeah. Yeah, those short series, and also some of your work on your Instagram or YouTube, they are full of cuteness. So when you just like that book just like dig out from the ground or something, like very old timey, and the writing is amazing. Yeah.
Oh, I love that you noticed that. I specifically have whenever I make a new spell and I'm going to illustrate it, I look up medieval carvings and take inspiration from them. So because I want it to look like this kind of this ancient thing.
I'm going to call the one art style you do, I'm going to call it dimple butt art style, because it's always like that's what I'm going to call it, because it's always like the cute little round butts on these cute things. And then you have behind them like the authentic village, the road that looks real. You have the pipes in the sewer that's like as close to what you can get it to be as you can. So you have this super juxtaposition of like the dimple butt style and the real world around it. Did you strive to get into like realistic modeling originally before stop motion?
I like that you consider it realistic modeling, because I never really considered it that myself. Like I, so with the shorts you mentioned in the pipe world, et cetera, I always spend a couple of days just creating the characters, designing them and refining them and kind of sharing the drafts with some of my friends and family to get some feedback until I find something that just, it looks like it exists, I guess. And sometimes like, you know, the head is too big and I don't know why. And then it's not until I make it smaller and then the eyes fit perfectly. And I'm like, okay, this is the design now. And then I build everything around that. So like I never, with like the Strange Ride where you have the little tiny dad and the big headed boy and all that stuff, like I design the world around them, I guess. So like for me, it just fits. I didn't intend for it to look, I guess, super realistic or refined. It's just like, this is in my mind, like this is the space that they live in, I guess. I don't know. I love world building, and like it just kind of happened. Like once I have the characters, the rest kind of just gets designed naturally, I guess, if that makes sense. It's not really intentional.
So you might not be doing it intentionally, but you do seem to put a lot more research into what could be real for the background as opposed to the characters, where you're like, what just feels right and is fun and fits.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, with the Let's Go Luna one specifically, they're from different regions of the world. So I did a lot of research because I wanted it to reflect and be inspired by the places they're from. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But with like Aiken Drum, I remember like the whole background is just felt and like stones and paper mache. And I remember like I just held, like once I had the Aiken Drum puppet up, who's made of like clay and fabric, I just held him up to so many different materials to kind of see what looked right. And for me, it was like the felt grass and the felt backgrounds just felt the most fitting to him, I guess.
Texture. So,
because like I tried a whole bunch of different materials to make like the grass out of and the backgrounds and his house. I made a couple drafts actually, and it just kind of, everything kind of just happened from me experimenting what I thought looked okay.
If that was you about to go grab the drafts, we'll wait. We're happy to look at them.
Well, I don't have them anymore.
Yeah.
When I say drafts, I mean like a really rough mock-up that I then like cut apart and change into something else and then add more stuff on top. Like it's a process. I'm sorry. I don't have stages to show you. Also, I end up just throwing out so much stuff because like, I don't like where am I going to store all this? Like,
I would love to show people not now, but photos of how much stuff you do have. And it's just lining every surface you own.
So there was a point where like I live in a one bedroom apartment and my entire living room was just sets. Like there was I didn't have any furniture. I just had this desk and I didn't have a couch or like tables or anything else. It was just sets on the floor. Like, and
that's a room.
Yeah. Luckily my dog was like respectful of them, like just stayed away from them completely. Never worried about him trashing them.
Wait, like while they were hot sets, they were on the floor just chilling?
No, hot sets would be, so I animated everything in my bedroom. I got like a table and I animated everything on top of that. And I just would like, the bedroom was just a mess of like lights on tripods and a camera on a tripod. And Moose, my dog, a couple of times because he wanted to like come and say hi, he like knocked the camera or something. So I made him sit outside of the bedroom whenever I was animating. And he was always sad. And I made sure that I never had a hot set because like sleep in the bedroom and like anything can happen in your apartment and you have a dog. So I just, whenever I was animating a shot, I would just finish it however long it would take.
Everyone's,
and I made sure that I didn't have any super long shots in my animation. All the shots are like just a couple seconds.
So what's the longest you took time-wise to actually do one shot?
I don't know, maybe like 8 hours or something. There were a couple shots where I like had to walk the dog in between so we could go to the bathroom, and those were super nerve-wracking because I'd be like, I don't know, you come back to your apartment and you're like, I hope nothing changed or the power didn't go out or like whatever or something. So Yeah, I don't know. Usually shots I could get done within a couple hours. Like I would spend so much time making sure everything was built to be ready to go, and the animation was just super easy.
Maybe we should back up to how you got these too. The Let's Go Luna shorts. I'm also curious, like, no one ever asks me where I'm going to make the music or what I'm going to do. Does anyone ask you, like, about your stage or about anything you're going to do? Or is it just a conversation to hire you and the scope and that's it?
With Let's Go Luna, they just hired me and sent me the scripts for the ones they thought would be interesting for me to work on. And that was it. I never had to pitch. So for the pipes, for instance, they asked me to submit a pitch based on their concept. And so I submitted that and they were happy with it. I've also had to, like, I've been asked to submit pitches for other things and I have not ended up getting them. So, like, for instance, a studio in the UK asked me to create a pitch for a stop motion show, which was really exciting, but they ended up not taking my idea. Another studio asked me recently to submit a pitch for a big client animation they had, and I submitted an idea and like made mockups and everything, and they decided not to go with me. So I have experienced that too, but with Let's Go Luna, I guess I can tell you the whole story, which is a long story.
We got time.
Okay, so 2018, I decided, well, like 2017, I started That Guy Comic, which was an Instagram watercolor thing that I would wake up at like 5-6 in the morning every day in watercolor. And I decided to commit to an entire year of doing that every single day and see what happens. And then through that, I ended up talking with people and realized that the animation industry is thriving in Toronto and that maybe I should get into it. Because if I can spend all of this time getting up in the morning to make animations or just watercolors, maybe I can do that as a career. So I went to Sheridan College with the intention of becoming a storyboard artist once I realized that was a career, because I remember going to this studio called Toon Box Entertainment, I believe. I might be getting that wrong, in Toronto. And I remember just being able to go and like interview everybody that was working there. And I remember interviewing the storyboard artist, and she, I forget her name, but she was just kind of in the office by herself, just drawing and creating the whole vision of the movie. And I was like, oh my goodness, they were producing the Nut Job 2 at the time. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. She's like creating the vision. She's just drawing every day. Like, I love drawing. I love developing things. Like, this is what I want to do. So I hired a tutor, put together a portfolio, went to Sheridan. And I spent so much time on my portfolio, like the required pieces, that I didn't spend any time on the personal art. So at the end of the portfolio, you have to submit like 10 pieces of personal art or something like that. And you get graded on that too. But it was like 2 days before the portfolio is due. I've just spent all my time working on life drawing and like layouts and et cetera, that I had no personal art. So what I did is I was like, well, I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to submit some of my old claymations from high school. So this is like 10 plus years ago. These are things I made on my desk, little characters taught with my voice. They're like 30 seconds.
Can we see any of them?
Yeah, I can send them to you. They're all on my YouTube channel. Actually, some of them are lost. I have no idea where they are. I made like 60 plus of them, just like every day I come home from school and make a claymation for fun.
Who are you?
I don't know.
That's awesome, very though.
Persistent. Some like a lot of projects, you just continue building and building.
Yeah, well, it's like so fun.
Every day. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what about it was, just like being able to create a character in a little tiny world and have it say something random and like the whole production be like, control the whole production, was just so fun. So I submitted these claymations as part of my portfolio, and that caught the attention of Chris Walsh, the coordinator of Sheridan's animation program, because he used to be a stop motion animator. He loves stop motion. So we like connected, I like called him before I went and like got some advice from him. And then like every once in a while, like we'd go for coffee and he was, while I was in school, and he was always encouraging me to do stop motion. And I was like, no, stop motion isn't a thing. Nobody's doing stop motion in Toronto anymore. The last big company in Toronto was Cup of Coffee, and they like closed their doors in like 2008. So I was like, I'm not doing this. No. So I was focused completely on storyboarding and like layouts and stuff. And then after year one was finished, Chris Walsh came to me. He's like, hey, the stop motion, the like fourth year stop motion studio is completely open during the summer. Nobody's using it. You can rent it. I'm pretty sure it's pretty cheap. So why don't you rent it and just have some fun and see what's up? So I was like, all right, I guess I will do this because why not? He's really encouraging me to. It would be interesting to see what happens with stop motion again when I have no expectations. And I had also been doing the podcast for a while and interviewing stop motion animators like crazy because I just love stop motion. But I was like, I'm not ever doing this again. Really long story, right? So long story short, with the summer, I ended up loving stop motion all over again. It just felt amazing. And then at the same time, I was interviewing stop motion artists on how to put together a portfolio to get hired. So I was like, okay, I have access to the super professional stop motion studio. So I was like, all right, what can I do to create something that looks professional enough as a production that could possibly get me hired as an entry-level stop motion artist somewhere? Because now that I've, you know, I've seen more opportunity around, there's people encouraging me to do stop motion. So I made the Silly Duck Wizard. The first intention was to create something that looks professional. And then my second intention was just to have fun and do whatever I wanted. And like, that's where the idea for Silly Duck Wizard came from. I worked with Davey Swatpaz, or David Ferguson is his real name, or his online name is Davey Swatpaz, City of the Voices. And then I finished that over the summer and posted it on Reddit, and it hit the front page of Reddit, like top of Reddit, which was insane for like a whole day. And got like thousands of comments. That was really emotional. And then like 4 months later, like I posted in September, and maybe in like January, February, I got a random email from Peter Hannon, who's worked with Joe Murray to create Let's Go Luna for PBS.
And being
like, hey, one of my production assistants sent me this video you did. Would you like to create some interstitials for Let's Go Luna in stop motion? And I was like, this is not real. So I was like, yes. But also I was super skeptical. Like I had no idea about it. And then it happened. So just from, I guess, long story is I just wanted to create something that looked professional. I ended up doing it in my own style with like my own ideas. And that was unique enough that it got some attention online. And then randomly one person saw it and told their director, who had an opportunity specifically to create. So Let's Go Luna for each episode hires an independent artist in Canada because of the tax credit to create a minute and 30 second long folktale animation as a break between two 11 minute episodes for Let's Go Luna, which will make like a 24 or whatever minute full episode. So it's like an episode of Let's Go Luna in a country, then a folktale made by an independent artist from that country, and then another episode of Let's Go Luna. So I got to do four of them. I did one of them as soon as I finished school my first year. So I did it in my second summer of second year. And then they immediately asked me to do another one. So then I was doing that during the summer and then during the fall school year. And then they asked me to do two more. And I did those two. Actually ended up quitting school halfway through doing one. And then I got Ultra City Smiths. And then I finished both of those interstitials while I was working on Ultra City Smiths as well.
When you receive the invitation, is it like at first they just ask you just one and then you finish it and then they ask you more? It's not like, hey, we have a collection, want you to create. So one after one and they love your work.
Yeah. So the first one you've seen, it's called Why Evergreens Are Always Green. It's with a bird who flies amongst trees and builds a home. So like I thought that was my only opportunity. So I was like, I want to do a really good job. And also like everything was new to me. I'd never made a stop motion production to that extent by myself. Like I was actually going to go into a studio that I was talking with and make everything there and use like their resources and stuff. But then the pandemic happened and I had to like suddenly build a studio in my bedroom. So I kind of approached that one with like, this is a one-time opportunity. I want to do a really good job. And yeah, they really liked it. And then they gave me another one, which was Aiken drum. And I was like, well, this is the last one they're going to give me. And I have school coming up again, so I don't know if I can do another one. So I like went to town on the set building and the animation and like everything. Cause I thought like, this is going to be like my magnum opus or whatever it's called of animation for the next couple of years. So I put a lot of effort into that one. And then after that one, I was like, I can't do anything more. Like, this is crazy. Like, I'm doing school. And then they asked me to do another one, which was The Strange Ride. And then like a couple of weeks into doing that, they asked me to do another one. And I was like, no. But I said yes, because I couldn't not say no.
I can see your work is really full of heart. I'm happy to know that you see everyone as like, you know, your biggest chance or your best shot. Like,
thank you. I like that. I mean, that's something that what you just said is something I think about all the time, because like for me, if I know other people are going to see my work, I want to make it. There's this concept in like business content called evergreen content, which is basically put so much effort into something that it'll last for a really, really long time and still be valuable and relevant even years from now, because there'll be payoff for that. So for instance, like with content, you want to create like an amazing how-to article that's like includes all the steps and all the information you'd ever need. So you don't need anything, you don't need any other resource on the internet. You just go to this one place and it's like create that. So that's what I try to do with my animation, where I'm like, I really, really want somebody who's like, I don't know, watching Let's Go Luna as a five-year-old to like come back to this in 20 years and be like, I still love this. And there's details that I haven't found yet that I'm looking for. That's why I always hide a mouse in everything I do. And like, there are other secret things that I won't tell you that I've done in them that like, I really hope that somebody who's like, just comes across this randomly in like 10 years is like, oh wow, this is really cool. So I don't want to create stuff that's just for the sake of getting it out there and churning. I want to create stuff that is unique and inspiring and part of me.
Yes.
No one knows any reason it wouldn't be good, right? So all people watch it see is, this is the best this person can do. They don't realize like, oh, it's a pandemic and he had to go home and make a set. They don't know like if they see my thing from mine from 2013 or whatever, they don't know like, oh, I had shittier sounds back then. Like, they don't judge you on that. They just look at the finished thing. And it's digital content. It'll be around when I'm dead, maybe. Who knows?
Like, totally. Yeah, what you said is really interesting, because like, especially with stop motion, like there's so much that goes in behind the scenes and so many challenges that like building my own studio, I almost said no. I was like, I can't do this. Like, this is insane. I have no idea what I'm doing. And you just kind of get through it and make the best of it and come across so many challenges and like push through it. And try to just create the best thing that you can with the resources and knowledge you have. But people don't know that at all. They just judge you based on like what they see. And that's fine, because I do that with everything else in my life.
Can we talk a little about the tiny mouse, really? Because
story.
In your story, you will say, if you found a mouse, please comment or send a message. I'm always very, you know, serious to find it, spend some time.
That started from the whole reason that guy exists is because of the mouse. So another backstory to before I became an animator. I hadn't done art in many, many years, like no art at all. And my brother is always encouraging me, because he's a CG artist since he was like 18. He's older than me by a year and a half. He was always encouraging me to like do more art. And I was like, no, why? I don't want to. Like, I'm a business guy, like whatever. I put that's behind me. So one year, like we were running out of Christmas gifts to give each other. Cause like, you know, when you're an adult and you can just buy things for yourself and then you run out of gifts to give your family, like ideas after a while. So I was like, what am I going to get you for Christmas this year? I have no idea. And he's like, just draw me that egg guy you used to draw in high school, like that guy, his name is that guy. He was just doodled in all of my assignments on every day in class. I'd just be drawing him. So he's like, just give me some drawings of him for Christmas. So I did. And that was like the first time I drew in so long, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I started posting them to Instagram, just like the little drawings I was doing. My good friend Allison, who is a former coworker from one of my past business jobs, she like followed me on Instagram and loved them and like I had posted one with a mouse in it, and she's like, "Oh my god, I love this mouse so much! I want to know more about him. Like, I want to know the backstory, where he comes from, et cetera, et cetera." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. He's just a mouse." So, I decided to start posting that guy every day on Instagram. But I wanted to. I was like drawing a mouse village for Allison as like. It's a fun thing to give her, to be like, here's where the mouse comes from. It comes from this sewer village that I like envisioned. But it was taking me a while to do this because I was still new to drawing. So in the meantime, I still wanted to post something every day. So I just posted that guy like meeting the mouse and going to his village. And it took me like 30 days to like draw that every day and finish the mouse village. So when I finished the mouse village, I just kept going. And then that's where the mouse comes from. And I've just included him in everything I've done since. Like all of my school assignments, like I haven't even posted them, but they all have mice in them somewhere, somehow, whatever. So, yeah, it's just a thing. And it's because of Allison. And if she's listening to this, hi, Allison.
And your brother. That's a really supportive brother.
Hi, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so you cool. Got amazing people around you. Yes. And just curious, like, why is the mouse purple? Is that your favorite color? No.
I really don't know why. Because my drawings in high school were just black and white with pen. And I don't know why. I have no idea. I think it started off as blue, actually, because I think gray is like too boring, or like gray in watercolor is like just black that you dilute. So I think I just chose blue, and then I think it turned into purple somehow.
Yeah, purple is perfect.
Yeah.
It's the color of royalty.
He's a royal mouse.
Yeah. You get the email from Peter and you figure out it's real.
Yeah. I remember he emailed and I was like, this isn't a real thing. And we had like a Zoom call and like, I was like, cool, it sounds great. And then like 2 more months passed and I hadn't heard anything. And I was like, whatever. And I'm going to like, I like made a deal to go back to my old job part-time in the summer and blah, blah, blah. And then I ended up, it just followed through, I guess. So
yeah. How do you feel about that? Because you got a lot of opportunities for the pitching and all of those things. Sometimes you need to find if it's really qualified, it's legal, or something, like the opportunity is real. So how do you tell whether the identity is right? And also when it doesn't come through, all of the time you're experimenting and have fun with it, if it pops up again, any other that kind of opportunity, you'll try again, or you'll start to select more, be more wise about things you'll choose?
Well, I don't think I'm at the point where I have too many opportunities coming up that I can be selective yet. Hopefully that becomes the case. So I'm happy to explore whatever opportunities come my way. But the first part of your question, that's a really good question. And just having your work, I've noticed that since like publishing my Let's Go Luna shorts, I get an email or a LinkedIn message maybe like once every other week, just from somebody being like, hey, I have a project. You know, I'd love for it to be animated. And they just email me, and then I ask follow-up questions like, okay, what's your budget? What style? And then like nothing happens, because then it's real and they're like, oh, money? Oh, you want to get paid? Like there's so many people emailing me that in the past were just like, can we collaborate and I'll give you a credit? And I'm like, no.
Okay.
Like you're asking me to pay and for my time and resources and stuff for you so I can get a credit, and you're like, I don't even know what this is. But Peter's, I don't know if he's listening to this, but I was sketched out because he didn't email me from like an official like work email. He just emailed me from his like personal email. So I was like, okay.
And that email is what?
Oh, never mind. Okay. So usually when a bigger company is emailing me, which has happened in the past, then I take it, then I feel like it's more legitimate, and you know, it seems like a more realistic opportunity. But sometimes people just send you their personal email and you never know, because sometimes that happens, like with Peter, it happens to lead somewhere. So also I knew Peter was like a big deal. So
CatDog was a big part of a lot of kids. So the moral of the story is, if Peter's listening, you love working for him.
Peter, honestly, Peter is so amazing. He was so fantastic to work with. Feedback was great. Like gave me so much opportunity to design things how I wanted, which was amazing. Like, I don't think I'm going to get another opportunity where I can design everything from start to finish. And like, so basically they would hand me a script or a song and they were just like, give us something back basically. And obviously we went through rounds of approval. Like I would submit my designs, I would submit my storyboards, et cetera, et cetera. And they would have like feedback like, oh, you know, at first Akin Drum's underwear, I wanted it to be pink polka dotted, but they didn't want to draw too much attention to his underwear because he's like a grown man. So they had to be like kind of beige. So like that was one piece of feedback. Or like another piece was in The Strange Ride, the actual line of the farmer to the son was to the farmer who's riding on the donkey's like, oh, why are you on the donkey? You're so much bigger and stronger. And I actually ironically designed the son to be like three times as big as the dad. So that it was like this juxtaposition of a small dad and a giant son. And the farmer to the dad says like, why are you so, you're so much bigger and stronger. You shouldn't be riding. But then in like, I guess PBS or whatever did like a testing round with a group of kids who were in an audience and all the kids asked like, why does the farmer say the dad is bigger when the son is bigger? So they had to, we had to cut that line and like, I had to change some animation around for that.
Kids aren't great at irony, unfortunately.
No, I'm like, this is a perfect opportunity to teach them humor.
You stupid kids. So for the song one, it was all recorded and done. And then I'm curious how you go about boarding, like what the difference between boarding to that as opposed to boarding to the script.
Yeah, boarding to that was kind of easier because, so boarding to a script, you just figure out how the animation should flow and the scene should flow on your own and the timing on your own. But boarding to the script, the timing is all figured out, and I actually just did it in Toon Boom. So I just loaded in the audio and looked at every time there was a beat and just made sure that I was hitting either a cut or like a consistent animation on that beat. So everything is kind of like loops, like Akin Drum. He like, you know, he bops up and down to the beat. So at the top, when he's at the top, he's at a, it's a beat. When he's at the bottom, it's a beat. So it's actually quite easy to storyboard and then animate to that because I just had to make sure that there was like a hold or a cut on the beat. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't have to worry about super fluid motions because everything just kind of goes pose to pose on the beat. So there was just a couple frames in between. And then,
On Toon Boom, can you set the grid to BPM? Like if you have a constant BPM for the song?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, part of one difficulty I had was I was animating on twos and like, you know, music isn't perfect for twos. It's not done on that. So like, I don't know. Maybe it's like, your beat ends up on a one sometimes, which was a little bit frustrating because then your animation doesn't look consistent to the beat. So if you actually watch the animation, some of the things are off the beat a little bit, but I don't think you notice because it's like a visual and audio medium and you're like looking and hearing at the same time. But I don't know if you can set animation to BPM. You can just, I think you can, I'm just looking at my Cintiq right now because I've Toon Boom open. You can only just do frame by frame, I think. It's up to like 30 times a second.
You can't do it by time. Like, so it's just frame, like locked to frame, no in between frames.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I don't know, maybe Storyboard Pro, which I don't end up using. I actually just do all my storyboards in Toon Boom. I find it easier, but Storyboard Pro is their other program. Maybe you can do it in there.
So you're in Toon Boom from start to finish?
Yeah.
And Dragon Frame for the shooting.
Yeah, Dragon Frame for... So I would export my animatic into Dragon Frame and then just make my animatic transparent, like maybe 50% transparent, and then just line up my real-life stop-motion animation to the transparent video through Dragon Frame and then just like a super... Dragon Frame makes it super easy. So everything, all the animations like figured out beforehand, even like the in-betweens and everything.
How rough are your animatics that you're sending for approval?
I can send them to you.
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you, Lations.
You're welcome, Lations.
There you go.
Oh, you got a new word.
I think they're extremely rough compared to what you might see people sharing on social media. But they're finished enough for me to use them as my only guide to creating the sets for the scale for how big the sets will be and how big the character has to be, and also the specific animation the character and poses the characters are doing as well. So for instance, like in the animatic, you'll see like two little bees just going up and down. I literally just use that as the transparent overlay in Dragon Frame to just animate those bees as stop motion puppets going up and down, for instance.
Let me make sure, like, so about a beat, it's including in your animatic, and for yourself it's like just raw animatic and it's enough for you to animate. But when you communicate with the clients, it will be more finalized animate, or it's okay with this rough, is good enough?
I feel like maybe the first animatic with the birds and the evergreens I made a little bit more cleaner because it was my first time working with Let's Go Luna. So, but I kind of got the feeling that they trusted my work by the end. So like my animatics got a little bit more messy and messy as I went by, but we're still, for me, they were what I needed to create the final animation and communicate what I was doing, but I wasn't cleaning it up at all. Like if you look at Aiken Drum in my animatic, he's literally a ball with a face. He's like not detailed at all. No beard, no clothes. So
no dimple yet.
No dimple butt, whatever. Yeah. So if I was doing that with a brand new client, I think I would have, in the animatic or the storyboards, made sure that Aiken Drum looked like he was Aiken Drum every single time for approval, versus like, I didn't personally need him to look like that because... So there's two things here, I guess. For stop motion, it's not super important because the puppet exists already and you're posing the puppet, you're not posing a drawing. But when you're animating in 2D, the storyboards actually are so much more helpful because the posing, you're just copying what's already created. So in when you're doing 2D, the storyboards and animatic need to be more precise because you're just recreating what that is with 2D animation. But for stop motion, like it doesn't need to be at all because... you know, you're working with a real life puppet that already exists and can be posed in itself. And you're just trying to match the overall movements.
Can we talk a little about the strange ride, actually, because it is hand drawn, right? The characters.
Yeah.
You want to say more about the process of all that?
I would like to know the choice to do the mixed media, the choice to not rig, and what your thoughts are on those choices after the fact.
Interesting. Okay, so Peter Hannon is listening to this. I'm sorry I lied to you. So I had done stop motion a bunch, but for those shorts. But I also love hand-drawn 2D animation, and I wanted more opportunity to hand-draw 2D animation, like for my portfolio, for experience or whatever. So I told him, I was like, hey, I'm in school. 2D would be like so much faster for me to do this. And can I do this interstitial in 2D? And my real intention was I just want to do 2D for like my portfolio and experience and have fun. And he was like, well, we already have so many 2D ones already. Like, you know, we really like that you do stop motion. Maybe there's a compromise. So we ended up picking, I'll 2D animate the characters. Also because like, there's a donkey with four legs. That's insane to animate in stop motion. Like I wasn't even going to,
I hear you.
There was no way. I'd have to come up with a very creative solution to have like this.
Yeah.
Cause the entire short is this, everybody's walking and walk cycles are so hard to do in stop motion.
Yes. Yes.
So we decided to do stop motion backgrounds and 2D characters, which I was very happy with. And yeah, it ended up taking me, I think, longer to do overall than Aiken Drum, because first of all, I had to create all these backgrounds, and like you can see if you're watching the video, I have the town here, which was all created from like balsa wood and cardboard, and like this, it was like very detailed and intricate to create this, and this took me a couple months of work to do. Versus like, you know, just cutting out felt grass for Aiken Drum was super quick. And then to 2D animate all these characters walking was also a task. So I don't know, I was just working day and night, just like doing all the roughs and then clean up. But I learned so much about Toon Boom. So I'm very happy and thankful I did it. And I'm really happy with the outcome. I think one of my goals in school was to somehow merge stop motion and 2D animation and make it look seamless. And I'm not 100% satisfied that I did that, but I think it was a really great attempt. And like it, like I don't know if you've seen like the old Popeye TV show or animated shorts where like the backgrounds are made in real life and there's like a pan and then Popeye's walking on top of them. Like I took inspiration from that. I'm very happy with how they turned out.
Two questions. One, you animated on twos for that, for the hand drawn, but then you used a plugin by your brother, right?
I didn't use the plugin by my brother. Very smooth pans in stop motion are difficult to do if you don't have the right equipment. So normally you'd get like some kind of MoCam equipment or a slider for your camera that you can program to move the camera a very precise amount each frame. So you get a very smooth pan, but I don't have any of that. And I was like working full time at Ultra City Smiths and like doing this in the evenings. And I didn't have time or like, I didn't want to spend all this money for like two shots. So, but I do have some pans in that short. So what I did is I set up a long ruler against the backdrop and put it on the table. And then the camera was steady, but every frame I would just push the whole set 1 centimeter. It took a couple times to like do correctly because like, you know, you're off by half a centimeter in one frame and then the whole thing sucks. So it took a couple times to do correctly, but that still wasn't smooth enough for the background to be. I think I ended up having to animate it on 30 frames per second instead of 12 frames per second. So that get it really smooth. So I found this AI program that I remember I saw it on like social media somehow. FlowFrame.
I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's one of the ones, I can't remember, but I think it's one of the ones where you like pay what you want. So anyways, all you do is you import your still frames into this program and then tell the program how many in between frames to make, like to double them, triple them, whatever. And then this AI will take, say you have frame 1 and 2, it'll take those two images and make an in between frame. So if you imagine frame 1 is pushed to 1 centimeter and frame 2 is pushed to 2 centimeters, the AI program will figure out what 1.5 centimeters looks like. And it looks perfect. Like every little grain of sand is replicated somehow, but in a very smooth motion. So I was able to use this AI to double the frames and create a very smooth pan, which is interesting because half of those frames don't even exist in real life. They're just created from a merging of two frames. So yeah, it looks.
Yeah. So you have CGI in it too, technically, then.
I guess so. Yeah.
Wow.
Triple mix media.
That's so cool.
I did some other tests too. I think I put some on Instagram with like my mouse jumping, and it creates all the in between frames as well. But some of them get a little weird, like when the mouse's legs are like bent like this, and then straight. The in between frame is like. It doesn't know exactly how the legs should be placed. It finds like a common ground between them. I think it'd be even more, maybe what I should have done is deleted all of my original frames and then taken the AI generated frames and then generate more frames for that. So the whole thing doesn't exist.
Like some kind of matrix thing. Cool.
We can go crazy.
Yeah.
That would be another shot for your thesis.
Yes. The thing that cannot depends on AI definitely is really, I love your animating style, especially let's say like a Akin drone. So the characters go with the tune and the hand reached there is going to that beat and put it back. It's so fun. So you cannot do that in AI, right? Physical joke about that.
I love what you just said because like, part of that physical joke. So he reaches his arm through the window and then the next shot is like this super long arm coming in through the window and then reaching to like pancakes. And I did that because like, I didn't want to then have to, stop motion is very difficult when you're working with physical things. Cause like the kitchen is a totally different size than Akin Drum is himself. And I didn't want to create a space where now I have Akin Drum interacting with so many things. It gets so complicated. Where are the shadows? Where are the rigs? How is he actually physically fitting in this space to reach to get the pancakes? So that's where like when I was storyboarding, I was just like, can we just remove him and just have his long arm come in and do this? And I was really worried they wouldn't approve that, but they thought it was fun too. So they did. Yeah. I was thankful they approved that.
That's awesome. Humor by necessity.
Yeah. The lesser amount of moving objects you have in stop motion, the better it is.
Do you support the long arm with a rig under the hand as it slides in, or how do you do that?
It was just a wire on a rig, but the rig is off camera, so I didn't even have to do any removal. And it was just a sturdy enough wire that I covered in Super Sculpey that it was light enough to animate. So the pancake, when it flips up, it has a rig attached to it because it's existing in space without touching anything.
Stop motion is so, it's, this is all wizardry to me. Like your spell book is working. Yeah.
Wizard. Silly Duck Wizard.
Silly Duck Wizard. Everybody watch it.
It is, it's really fun.
Thanks.